Who's in charge here?
This new sec man was wide, with muscle, not fat. His features oddly flat, as if there were a lot of Oriental or American Indian blood in his heritage. His long black hair was tied off in a ponytail with an ornately decorated length of rawhide. His boots were of some kind of lizard skin, and a brace of pistols rode protectively behind the buckle of his gun belt, the handles turned out for a fast draw. The blue head of a scorpion tattoo peeked from under his shirt, and he had too many scars to count. Scorpions again, Ryan noted. It had to be the crest of the local baron. Yeah, this was the sec boss, without a doubt. The son of an East Coast baron himself, Ryan could tell the difference between a hired gun and a leader.
That's me. The name's Ryan Carter.
Alexander Hawk, sec chief here at Rock Pointville.
The big man openly appraised the people in the wag. There was a lot of hardware on display, pointing his way.
Those blasters work?
Ryan crossed both arms across his chest.
Only one way to know for sure, but it'll cost you red.
Hawk leaned forward in the saddle.
Fair enough.
These Outlanders didn't rattle worth a damn. Good, maybe he could hire them on as mercies. They always needed more blasters during the dry season. Shifting his stance, Hawk addressed Ryan directly, as if the rest of the companions were no longer of any importance.
So what do you want here?
Just food and water.
Ryan indicated the wag.
Got mill fuel to trade. The good stuff, not the cheap shit.
Hawk stroked the neck of his stallion.
Won't buy you a thing here. We don't have any wags. Got anything else?
Ammo.
JB lifted a small box of .22 caliber cartridges and shook it to make the rounds jingle.
You do have blasters, don't you?
The metallic sound snapped Hawk's head around fast, and he squinted as if reevaluating the situation.
Full box of 50.
Count them if you want.
I will. Better not be duds loaded with dirt.
Christy drew her S&W and fired a single round into the sky. The noise echoed along the plain, and in seconds a dozen more armed people were at the Ville wall, pointing long blasters their way. Hidden behind the canvas sheets, Mildred didn't take the scope off the man with the 70mm, pointing at the GMC wag. Hawk stared at the redhead for a moment, and then cracked his face into a hard smile.
Fair enough. Food, room, and water for all of you for a day, in exchange for the box.
One day for a whole box? That's Phoebe talk.
Ryan shifted his boots on the hot ground.
Boy's right. A week is more like it.
Hawk shook his head.
No, one day. This is the only water east of the Glass Lakes. Next spring is a week's ride away if you can find the spot. Take it or leave it. Your call.
Reaching into a pocket, Ryan pulled out another box of .22 cartridges and tossed it to the sec man.
Two boxes, 3 days.
Caught by surprise, Hawk gave that emotionless smile again.
Deal.
He tucked the ammo into his shirt. Then turning the Appaloosa Stallion, he started walking the beast back toward the Ville. Climbing back into the cab, it took Ryan 2 tries to finally get the engine running, the whole vehicle shaking from the effort of the struggling diesel. Sounded like a seal might have broken, but at least the fan belt was still holding. With the gauges rapidly climbing back into the red zone again, Ryan drove the wag over the boundary marker, heading toward the main murder alley of Rock Point Ville and the large open door. The mounted sec men led the way through the murder alley and into the gate. Keeping to a crawl so the horses could stay in front, Ryan drove the rattling truck through the opening, the heavy gate rumbling shut behind to leave them trapped inside a short tunnel that penetrated the wall. The sides were smooth and plain, without decorations or even blaster ports for defense. On the other hand, the wag was barely able to traverse the passageway, the canvas awning less than a foot from the ceiling, with the tall radio antenna loudly scraping along overhead to the obvious annoyance of the sec men. Any vehicle slightly larger than the GMC would never be able to gain entrance, much less make it completely through. Christy glanced around them on every side.
An ambush by any other name.
Indeed, dear lady. I do believe the operative phrase, quote, sitting ducks, end quote, would be in order here.
Born and raised in a Ville protected by a drawbridge, Ryan agreed with that assessment. To any invaders on foot, the tunnel would be a death trap with nowhere to run or hide from the blasters of the Ville Secmen. The tunnel was dark with the front gate closed, but there was no need to switch on the headlights as dim sunlight showed at the far end. As the companions drove into a sunny courtyard, the Ville spread before them in disorganized rows as if each house had been built wherever the owner felt like it. Mildred drew a pencil and notebook and started tracing their way along the twisting streets.
This is like a maze.
Stretched between the adobe brick buildings were sheets of cloth that rippled with the desert breeze, but the material effectively reduced the devastating effects of the noontime sun to a tolerable level. An adobe brick machine gun nest stood directly in front of the tunnel, with two more off to the sides to give crossfire. Stout pylons of gray rock jutted from the blue cobblestone street, and the companions recognized them as tank traps, designed to bust the treads of an APC, rendering it immobile. As the horses turned into a side street, the wag followed, and the milling people stopped whatever they were doing to stare in wonder at the vehicle. The effect was unnerving until Ryan remembered that Hawk said the place had no wags. Just simple curiosity, then. Or was it something more? In spite of the apparent wealth of Rock Point, there seemed to be a lot of fear in the faces he saw. The crowds parted before the armed Secmen to keep from being trampled by the unshod hooves of their mounts, but they avoided even looking at Hawk. The Sec Chief rode like a baron through the streets, the ironclad hooves of his stallion ringing loudly against the cobblestones, announcing his approach. The people were sensibly dressed in loose clothing of varied stages of cleanliness, the usual mixture of salvaged clothing from pre-dark days and tanned hides. Shoes were ragged and repaired into faded patchwork that resembled the deliberate camo patterns of military fatigues, with children going about barefoot. Nothing that could potentially be a weapon was in sight, and also no machines, not even non-functioning devices. In the shade of the rippling cloth roof, a legless leathersmith was tanning the hide of a mountain lion, while a young assistant stitched a saddle. A dwarfish woman was sharpening knives on a whetstone, and drunken laughter sounded from the second floor windows of what was obviously a gaudy house. Situated on a corner, an old potter was palming red clay into the shape of a bowl. Behind him were wooden racks filled with drying plates and pitchers. On the top shelf, the better plates carried the detailed design of a scorpion. Dean frowned.
Ugly design? Who the frag wants to eat off a bug?
Doc started to correct the boy, but Mildred rested a hand on his arm, shaking her head. He grimaced, then shrugged. The scholar had tried to explain many times that scorpions weren't insects, but an arachnid, an entirely different species, like spiders. But nobody seemed to care. If it had more than four legs, it was a bug, ipso facto. Case closed.
Could be the Baron's crest. I noticed that the Sec Chief had a scorpion tattoo on his chest.
Christy nodded and pointed above the potter.
See those slits in the Ville roof? This deep in the desert, there would be no easy supply of charcoal for a kiln, so everything has to be sun-dried.
Lemons and lemonade. They turned a problem into an asset.
Jack shook to the motion of the wag over the uneven cobblestones.
Nuking hot enough beat kiln, even with roof.
JB adjusted his glasses.
Black dust. I don't like this. Not one damn bit.
What, is something wrong? The Ville looks peaceful enough.
That's the bastard problem. No gallows.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Ryan glanced down cross streets and into the alleys. In almost every Ville, there was an execution area near the front gate to warn outlanders to behave, or else. But not here. No gallows, chopping blocks, cages, or pits. However, there were always people to chill. Thieves, traitors, murderers, whatever. So where did the Ville ace these kind of people? Mildred brushed back her beaded hair.
If the job isn't being done in public, then it's being done somewhere hidden. We better make sure none of us get detained by the Secmen.
Ryan kept his voice low so the Secmen couldn't hear.
Remember, we're just here to buy water, not to poke our noses into local troubles. If the people aren't happy with the present Baron, that's their business, not ours.
I think you may have spoken too soon.
Christy's hand instinctively rested on her gun belt. The noise grew as the Secmen and companions entered a small courtyard, where the cloth roof was gone and the sun blazed down in all its fury. Set apart from every other tan adobe building in the ville, this structure was made of red brick and looked as strong as a bunker. It was two stories tall, yet oddly without windows, and a set of wide granite steps led to a bronze door, green with age. Armed guards stood on either side of the door, routinely checking through the clothing of the people waiting in line to enter. And then again, as they came out, clutching small clay pots that loudly sloshed.
I see that water is tightly rationed here. That the ville well?
Hawk replied with a dark scowl.
No, that's our temple. You won't be seen inside there.
The whip sounded again as the horses and wag went around the temple, bringing into view a skinny man wearing rags. His hands tied to iron rings set into the brick wall, legs covered with rivulets of blood. A shirt hung in filthy strips from his back, and a large Sek man was whipping him with a length of smooth leather.
17, 18, 19, 20!
The leather cracked as it touched the prisoner's skin, making another section of clothing drop fluttering to the ground. A red welt rose on the prisoner's bony shoulders, an old scar splitting open, and fresh blood trickling down his trembling torso. While the Sek man reclaimed the whip, the prisoner wheezed for breath through his nose, a wad of dark leather held in his mouth. Doc twisted his hand on the silver lion's head of the sword stick.
Padding to keep from breaking his teeth. Barbaric.
The Sek man jerked his head toward the wag at that, and Christie jabbed the scholar with a hard elbow to the ribs. Scowling darkly, Doc clamped his mouth shut with a clear effort of willpower. As the group passed by the site, the whip rising and falling in the background, Ryan turned to the Sek chief.
So what was his crime?
Water thief.
Hawk shook the reins to keep his horse abreast of the wag. The animal didn't like to be near the noisy wag with its exhaust fumes and kept shying away.
Remember that sight, or else it could be you. Always need more sacrifices for the scorpion god.
A Sek man solemnly bobbed his head slightly in a small bow.
No blood, no water.
Turning his head that way, Ryan met the gaze of the Sek man who had spoken, and was surprised to see the guard who had first met them outside the ville. The two exchanged hostile glares for a moment, then the guard rode onward.
We're gonna have trouble with that one.
Dean glanced to the side.
Heads up!
Following the direction, Ryan saw a red brick building rising above the tan adobe structures. Some sort of a keep, a fort within the walled ville. The windows had thick wood shutters and iron bars, blaster slots were everywhere, and a blue flag bearing the golden outline of a scorpion fluttered from a bare metal pole on the roof. Standing at a corner of the roof with the afternoon sun at his back was a man, hands clasped behind him, a double rig carrying a blaster under each arm, a thin trail of smoke rising from the slim cigar in his unseen mouth. Ryan had no doubt that was the Baron. As if sensing the attention, the Baron turned to look down at the vehicle passing the keep. Then he turned to walk inside the fortress, a phalanx of bodyguards staying close, with weapons in hand. Ryan kept his voice neutral.
That where we're going? To see the Baron?
No need. You'll be staying a few blocks over that way, at the motel.
Motel?
That was a word Mildred hadn't heard in a long while. Hawk slowed his horse to speak to the woman in the rear of the vehicle. His look of frank disapproval broke her reverie and sent a shiver down her spine that the woman tried to hide. Then Mildred noticed him looking at her satchel, which bore a red cross. Oh, he had something against healers. That explained it. It wasn't the color of her skin or her sex, but that she was a healer, a scientist. Odd that some people still harbored that hatred.
Motel is what we call the inn where outlanders stay until it's time to go. That is, until they cause trouble and go to the temple.
Ryan watched the dashboard gauges start to climb once more.
No blood, no water.
For a moment, Hawk glared at the man, unsure of how to react to that. Then he kicked the flanks of his mount and rode on ahead of the others.